Hello, everyone, and welcome to F1 Nation. I'm Tom Clarkson, and this is the official Formula One podcast that brings you reaction, analysis, and breaking news from the F1 paddock. We're back for 2026, which promises to be a very exciting new era of Formula One. We'll have previews and reviews of all 24 races, the first of which is now less than 2 weeks away. We'll look ahead to the Australian Grand Prix in our big season preview next Monday. But in this show, we're reflecting on what we've learned from pre-season testing. There's been a shakedown in Barcelona, followed by 2 3-day tests in Bahrain, where the teams and drivers have been getting to grips with these all-new cars. F1 TV commentator and former Renault driver Jolyon Palmer is with me. Hi, JP. It's been the shortest winter break ever for the teams. How's it been for you?
Short, but I was actually quite lucky that I had a nice holiday. When the teams were all out in Barcelona, then they went to Bahrain. I was in Barbados for the week, so I was recharging the batteries. And it meant that when I went to Bahrain for test two, I was full of vigour and had not really a huge amount of idea of what we were going to see. But I've enjoyed it so far. Short break. And when you speak to the other guys, when I did rock up, everyone's saying what a short winter this was. And the drivers have been in the factories since sort of like early January preparing for it. So it was probably slightly longer for me than them.
Well, how excited are you for the new era of Formula One, having seen the cars in Bahrain?
I'm really excited for it now. I think there was a level of, you know, wondering what's going to unfold with the new rules, and there definitely still is. But having seen the cars on track, I like them. I think from the outside, they look fun. The driver's having to work at the wheel. There is a whopping amount of unknowns with it. How fun is that? We're heading to the first race with really no idea how the racing is going to kind of look, who's going to be the favourites. There's going to be differences track to track, which we haven't seen for ages. The race starts, I'm sure we'll get into, but they're going to be very different. It's a whole new world, TC. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and aesthetically, I think the cars look great. They look more nimble. Would you agree with that than last year's cars?
Oh, 100%. Did you get trackside at all
when you were at Bahrain? Yeah.
They look good, don't they?
Yeah.
That was
I like
thing.
A smaller Formula One car. I mean this affectionately, but by comparison to last year's cars, you know, they were trucks compared to these things. So big, whereas these are sort of, you know, they're shorter, they're narrower tyres. It just looks more racy, quite apart from, you know, what you're actually looking at on track. The cars just look more racy.
Yeah. They're less stable. They look a little bit more darty. Also, when I saw the headline numbers, 30 kilos less weight, 20 centimeters shorter wheelbase, I was thinking, you know, that's in the right direction, but is it going to be a visible difference? But very quickly, I was trackside the first morning of the last test, and I thought, okay, wow, they do look different, and you get a very different perspective trackside. Just the way the cars turn in much sharper now with that shorter wheelbase. I was stood on the apex of turn four. It's quite a nice spot just to look in on a sort of low, medium speed corner. And you can see the drivers just hustling away at the wheel more, whereas the old ones had a load of downforce, but they were a little bit more passive. So that was a nice starting point.
Well, how should we do this? Should we just go through it team by team, really, and just look at the biggest talking points from the two Bahrain tests and that shakedown in Barcelona? Why don't we start with Mercedes? They were pre-season favourites before a car hit the track. Do you think that is still the case now?
Yes, I do. But it's really difficult to put your finger on exactly why. Because I think the main thing for me with Mercedes is the car looks good out on circuit. It looks fairly consistent. There are reliability question marks still. And the drivers were not without lockups, which has been a massive feature of everyone's sort of inconsistencies this year. But generally, you look at Mercedes and you see they don't bother doing any level of performance running. They don't really bother doing any level of long running, sort of race runs. Everyone else was out there trying to put themselves through the classic race run. Mercedes didn't do that. They're very, very happy. You see George Russell around the paddock and he's just beaming. It's one of those winters where he's not. There are the various drivers who have different opinions on the cars. The only thing ever that comes out of his mouth is just glowing positivity. And you try and piece it all together and you think they have got something in hand still. So that's the overriding thing. The car looks good and the team are just oozing confidence.
What about Kimi Antonelli? He's got that year under his belt now. Did you see anything in him, particularly on track, in terms of the way he was dominating that car that gives you confidence that he's going to be a player for the championship?
I wouldn't rule him out. I think, naturally, when you say Mercedes are looking the best, you think this is George Russell's year. Kimi had a slightly tougher run of it in terms of some of the reliability things. He had his last day curtailed with a power unit issue. But I think he looks good on circuit. And I sense that we're still getting high confidence Kimi coming back. Even the way he's just carrying himself around the paddock. I think stepping into F1 last year, having that year of sort of up, down, up, finishing it on a high, stepping into a new car, so much going on for all the drivers. But I'm sensing he's got a good grasp of the car. He looks good out on circuit, and he's not out of the question to take the fight to George.
Do we mention compression ratios? I mean, Mercedes are rumoured to have found an advantage, which, if real, could give their engine more power. The rival engine suppliers want the FIA to change the way this is measured, and the PU manufacturers are voting on whether to introduce a new test from the summer break onwards. What do you expect? I mean, how much of a factor is this?
I don't know how big a factor it is. It was the buzzword, wasn't it, over the winter when we heard that Mercedes had found a little trick with the compression ratios. And it seems to be, a cleverly worded exploitation of the rules. I don't know. When you see the cars on circuit and you see the level of work going on the battery side of the power unit, the recharging, which is so important, of how much energy you have to deploy, which is half your power. The compression ratio, you know, it seems to be that it could be an advantage for Mercedes. But I think James Vowles said it wasn't the big thing in this. And there are Mercedes customer teams obviously running the same engine. And it's not like you have all the Mercedes power cars. They're going to be 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think it might be an advantage. It's going to be an advantage whatever happens. They're going to carry into the start of the year. I don't sit here and think it's the magic bullet. If Mercedes win, it's because purely of that.
Okay, well, let's talk about their customer teams now. Start with McLaren, the reigning champions. What did we learn about them in Bahrain?
Everyone's trying to play down their chances, aren't they? And McLaren seem to be doing that as well as anyone. But I left the test in the end thinking they might be in the mix here. And they'd gone from sort of managing to persuade everyone that they were going to be the fourth best team. They're a customer team, which the theory is new engines, getting integration between the power unit and the chassis is going to be so important. And that's where McLaren are going to maybe fall foul compared to Mercedes, who've known more about the power unit spec before they've managed to lock in their chassis design a little bit better. So, you know, the theory is there that Mercedes have an upper hand as the power unit manufacturer. But by the end, I thought McLaren car looked good on circuit. It looked as good as any. Generally, the cars look fairly consistent. They were getting on top of the race starts, which is a really big factor that I thought Mercedes themselves looked probably the weakest team on. And the performance seemed to be pretty good on low fuel, high fuel. Consistency was there. And let's not forget with McLaren, they've proven that they're able to develop a car better than anyone in the last set of regs. So the way that the car's performance is going to be found is going to be different. There's no ground effect, which was the golden set of regs that they were on top of. But they have a working wind tunnel. They still have a great set of technical brains back at Woking. If it's correlating with one set of regs, you know, there might be different areas to exploit. No more Venturi tunnels, different engineering philosophies. But if it works in back at factory, then they've proven they can put it on the car and find performance. So absolutely in the fight again, I'd say.
There was an underlying confidence to all the main players at McLaren at their launch just before the start of the first Bahrain test while you were sunning yourself, JP. But I really felt that was a confident team. And then I caught up with Rob Marshall, their chief designer, during Bahrain too, and he was saying it had actually gone remarkably smoothly, and he still had that confidence that he'd had 10 days earlier. So I agree with you. I think McLaren are going to be definitely there or thereabouts.
Did you see Lando out in Bahrain? Because
I didn't see him on track, no.
I just felt like, not on track, but just the way that he was carrying himself. Obviously, he's now walked back into the paddock as a champion. So sadly, I don't know what that feels like, but I can imagine you walk in with a spring in your step and you think, hey, whatever happens here, I'm a champion now. And he's now, you know, one of the select few with Fernando, with Lewis, with Max. And all of the stresses of last year, they're done. He's achieved what he wanted to do. And I just thought, seeing him around, he seems happier. He seems really, really obviously keen to come back and win again, but like there's a bit of weight lifted off his shoulders as well. And yeah, I think Oscar's obviously got a lot to prove this year up against him and trying to achieve his championship. And I think they're going to be there again.
Oscar made a massive jump from 24 going into 2025, didn't he? So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a change he makes coming into this season. Although these are the first non-ground effect cars, Formula One cars, that he's going to have raced. So it's going to have a different feel. Whereas, of course, Lando was around in 19, 20, 21 when we had something a little more akin to what we're faced with this year. But I think it's a phenomenal driver.
I don't know
driver
if we've had anything like this, though, to be honest.
Because of the recharge and the energy side of it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you're right. The ground effect cars were driven in a different way. So I hadn't really thought about that. Oscar's never raced a non-ground effect F1 car. So you used to just plonk the cars as low as you could to the floor. They'd be really stiff. You wouldn't have pitch change, which we're back into now. You've got rake back into the cars. So the rear's a lot higher than the front. It's all a different feeling. But there is... I mean, speaking to some of the drivers, they are saying, forget the nuance of the feeling. Yeah, it's there and it's different, but everything else that's going into this is a whole world of complexity no one's seen.
Quick mention of the other two Mercedes customer teams, Williams and Alpine. Let's start with Williams. They missed the shakedown in Barcelona. How far behind are they as a result of that?
I think they are pretty far back. They're one of the disappointments for me this season, because they had such a good end to last year. The podiums, fifth in the constructors, both drivers firing at various points of the year, and I still think their driver lineup is really strong, but it just doesn't seem like they're hitting the ground running. Like you said, miss Barcelona. To get out, they've then had to have workarounds to get the car on the circuit. The headline thing with Williams is they have the heaviest car on the grid, by all accounts. And I've heard numbers that are just extraordinary of how heavy that car is. And yeah, again, speaking to people around, they say, if you can drop the weight out of this car, we will be competitive. But there is so much that they need to get rid of. The good news is, it's an easy development area in time. It's not like they're
expensive development area.
Also true. Development anyway, that is expensive. They had to literally manufacture so many new parts and try and, you know, no one's intending to start the season so heavy. But nonetheless, I would say if I could be chasing, trying to get the weight down or chasing adding downforce, getting the weight down might be an easier fix in terms of, you know, technically than trying to correlate your wind tunnel, your CFD, and put some bits on the car to get your car working with more downforce. So probably the development rate for them could be okay. Obviously, the Mercedes power unit will be working fine. But from where they were and where they sort of promised to be with this new set of regs, massively on the back foot.
Look, what about Alpine? They've made the switch from having their own engine to Mercedes this year. They finished last in the Constructors' Championship last year, and they're in a much better position now. Arguably, the biggest winners over the winter of the entire grid.
I think so, yeah. They had a lot to move forward, didn't they? So it's a nice position to be in, because they've been losers for a couple of years. But I think the big thing with them is that, number one, they tell me they're on the weight. So you could contrast them to Williams with the same power unit. That's a big tick. But they are still trying to integrate the Mercedes power unit. And that's in terms of, obviously it's bolted in the car, but new ways of working with a different set of engineers, different processes, different procedures. And that's something that's not, it's not like you bolt a different power unit in, you say goodbye to the Viri Renault engineers, you say hello to the Mercedes HPP guys. It's not absolutely seamless. They will obviously get there. There are a load of professionals, and that's a little bit more fine tuning to come. But the car looks good. They're all very happy.
Did you see anything in Franco Colapinto that got you excited? The reason I asked that is this is his first pre-season in Formula One. Remember, he arrived with Williams halfway through 2024. Then Jack Doohan was in the Alpine at the start of last year. So this is his first sort of clean run into a Formula One season. Did you see anything from him just knocking up? I mean, he knocked up a decent mileage and I think set the 11th fastest time of the week.
Both drivers did. They were generally a team that had a good chance to rack up the laps, which will obviously, I think, will benefit Franco a lot more. And I was thinking as I was watching him drive round, he basically looked fine. He didn't look like he was struggling with anything. The car looked like it was quite darty on the front end. They seem to have sort of trying to get everyone's trying to get the deceleration on the rear axle, which makes the cars inherently unstable on the way in, then understeering a little bit more through the mid corner, and then they're getting a massive welly of power torque coming off the corners. So they're your three general trade-off areas through a corner. But yeah, Franco looked consistent and fine, and I was just thinking the fact that the car can fight for points regularly is a blessing, because last year he would have had to do something magic to wind up in the top 10. And we barely saw it with Pierre. So this year there will be so many chances for him to get points early on. That'll give him more confidence. And I think we'll get a much better picture of Franco, the F1 driver this year.
What about Red Bull Racing? Mercedes reckons they're the benchmark. Was that gamesmanship, or were there reasons for Max Verstappen et al. To feel confident?
I think it felt like gamesmanship, but then actually rocking up and seeing the performance of that car, they have got good straight line speed. They do seem to be able to recharge really well, which is a crucial part of driving this year. They are aggressive, which has been the Red Bull mantra for ages, but you can see Max, he bangs it down the gears so well. He's able to deal with that car that's a little bit loose at the rear better than anyone else. They're a gear shorter in some corners, which will help to get the recharge. And they seem to be able to deploy energy maybe more freely than anyone else. So I start to believe that they have a really good power unit. And I think that's probably the most impressive facet to me, the fact that Red Bull in this really complex era where you've got, I mean, we'll get on to Honda, I'm sure, you've got Audi coming in, you've got Ferrari and Mercedes trading blows, but Red Bull now manufacturing their own power unit have done a good enough job that they're in the mix. Don't you find that seriously impressive?
Unbelievable. And to think that their first on-track running with that power unit was at the Barcelona shakedown, and on day one they did more than 100 laps.
Yeah. And when you consider, do you remember in 2014 where they were with Renault as power unit? I mean, they barely were doing any laps. Honda, the tale of 2015 and now 2026 is fairly well documented. And these are guys with an unbelievable record of delivering world championship power units. And Red Bull now, in the first iteration of doing their own, have got power and reliability, and seem to be fairly drivable. It's really impressive.
Quick word on Isaac Hadjo, Max Verstappen's new teammate. I think there was a strong argument that this was a good time to be Max Verstappen's teammate at the start of a new rules cycle, because Max hasn't had a chance to optimize everything around him yet. Do you still feel that now?
No.
after all the testing, or is he's in a hard place already?
Well, I think I've decided now there's no good time to be Max Verstappen's teammate. The logic was there, new regs for everyone. But when you actually see how these cars are playing out, Laura Mecchi said it in interviews last week. He said Max, he's been very outspoken, doesn't like the cars, but he might be the best suited driver to the cars. And that's because of the way that you're putting so much energy through the rear on deceleration. Again, it's going to destabilize the car. And that is famously what he's been very good at, controlling a lively rear end, getting that all the turn in done with really neat inputs, making sure you're not sliding too much, but you have a really direct car. It's what his teammates have struggled with, and is what Isaac's now got to deal with. So the philosophy with which his cars are sort of naturally tending to go towards, I do think it suits Max pretty well. On top of that, Isaac had a pretty unlucky run through testing as well. So he was, I think both weeks, he lost a significant amount of time in the car.
From reliability?
Yeah, reliability. Nothing that he did. And he looked okay in the car.
JP, actually, right at the very beginning at that Barcelona shakedown, he put it into the wall exiting the final corner. So, some of it's been self-inflicted. And I just find myself looking back to when Pierre Gasly crashed during pre-season testing as a new Red Bull recruit in 2019. And he never really recovered from that. But Helmut Marko is no longer at the team. So I think there might be a little bit less pressure on the young guys now.
Yeah. Do you remember Dani Kvyat? When he jumped into the Red Bull for the first time at Jerez, and he took the nose off it and had to drive around with no front wing for the rest of the day as a sort of punishment, did 20 laps just to do something in the car. Yeah, there is a bit of previous with the Red Bull second drivers having an early crash as well. I thought he'd get away with that, to be honest. I don't know the details. There was not a huge amount of reporting. The team had been hush-hush of Barcelona. But it was a wet day, and I think probably he was one of the first that felt the full force of that.
What about those prancing horses? The dark horses, maybe, on the grid. Let's talk Ferrari. Charles Leclerc stole the headlines at the end of week two, getting the fastest lap of testing. Is this Ferrari being winter world champions once again, which I remember in the 90s they used to get that accolade every year, or are they genuine contenders this year?
I think can we call it both? We've crowned them world champions of winter testing already. I loved, my favourite thing in the whole of testing was watching that 45-minute window of Charles Leclerc, day three. He put on what? Six sets of different of new tyres, C3s, then C4s, and was just banging through quali sims. And seeing him drive the car, you could see occasionally there'd be a setup. There must have been running setup changes because the car would look more lively, less lively. But any single lap looked animated, and it was really quick. And it was just fun to watch him driving a car that has to be driven on the edge, and it looked really good. Sometimes he was over the top of oversteer and almost dropped it in the wall. But that's what Charles Leclerc likes to do. He's on the edge of that rear instability the whole time. But they obviously were pushing for performance. And there's absolutely no hiding the fact that they were taking the fuel out and they were gunning for it. But they look good, don't they? They look good. And also, it was so good to see generally what Formula One cars might look like pushed on the limit in quali sim. But yeah, I thought the Ferrari car, I love the fact that it's still on the nose. It's lively. The power unit looks pretty different to everyone else. They're not having to be super aggressive on the way into the corners in terms of the gear shifting. They're able to run a higher gear than even the Mercedes power unit cars by the end of the test, certainly than the Red Bulls, which allows for better drivability. So probably you're less inconsistent with what you're expecting on the way into the corners, which allows you to run more front end and could be a more efficient way to run the car, so long as you're recharging the battery. I thought the Ferrari power unit looked really good, and I believe they will win races this year. I don't know if they'll fight for the championship. I hope they will, but they're certainly in the mix.
And Lewis Hamilton's making all the right noises as well, saying, this is more his kind of Formula One car. And, watching him drive it with so much confidence was a positive for him. Look, you talk about the drivability, though, of the power unit. Is that why it is so brilliant away from the line? We saw a few practice starts each day at the second Bahrain test. And the Ferrari, or anything Ferrari powered, actually, you can include the Haas in that, was just brilliant.
Yeah. I think it's linked to the... It's all linked in. So they, by all accounts, have a smaller turbo in the power unit, which means that it spools up much quicker. And whilst the Mercedes power cars are struggling to spool up the turbo, so they're sitting on the grid for longer, there's no MGUH this year, which did basically all of that work for you last year. One of the big changes of the power units is that's gone. So I don't think anyone quite expected the starts to be as difficult as they were early on. But I think the Ferrari, it fires up a lot quicker, basically, and it seems to be a lot more forgiving with the rev range. Where you look at the Mercedes power units and the Red Bull as well, getting off the line, and there's a knife edge between bogging down, anti-stalling, or you drop the clutch and they're just sitting there wheel spinning. The Ferrari looks like it's way more forgiving. And I am looking forward to the start of Melbourne because they are going to be so inconsistent. But the only thing you can say is the Ferraris and the Haas cars were rocket ships off the line. So even if they get out qualified by Mercedes, even if they start top five, the smart money could be on Lewis Hamilton or Charles Leclerc leading into the first corner in Melbourne. It is that drastic.
Oh, you're making me believe. I love the innovations that we saw on the Ferrari as well, whether it's the rotating rear wing, whether it's the aero vane, you know, by the exhaust. This is Loic Serra's first car as technical director. And for a team that is such a pressure cooker environment, to be introducing these innovations suggests that it's a very healthy, happy environment there. Because otherwise, if there was a culture of fear and getting something wrong, you wouldn't be doing that. So I think Fred Vasseur, team principal, has obviously done a brilliant job in encouraging people to do what they do and don't be afraid, come up with new stuff.
Yeah, they've got actually really good previous of turning up to a new set of regs with interesting design and performance. When you look at the start of 2022, Leclerc won the season opener, was the early championship leader. They had the really scalloped side pods. It was an interesting different design area that they went down. And the same with 2017, they came to the fore as well. This year, I don't know. I felt like everyone in the paddock was kind of playing down this rear wing, but I mean, it flipped upside down on the main straight. I've never seen anything like it in my life, TC.
Do you think they'll race it?
So they ran it for one cheeky run at the start of day two in the test, and they probably hoped that everyone would be still half asleep and they'd get away with it, get it back in the garage, and no one would spot it. But that's not how F1 works anymore. There are keen eyes everywhere, and it was quickly picked up. So now everyone knows what's going on. But there are two things. You flip the wing upside down, and this is all about the active aero. So it's about effectively what used to be DRS, opening up the slot gap and getting reduced drag. And when you look at it, surely it is reduced drag. You're getting a bigger hole through the air by flipping the wing upside down. And I believe that aspect will give them an advantage. But then you have to wonder what are the costs of that. Number one, weight might be a factor when you maybe need to reinforce certain parts and add weight to the rear wing. And the other thing is how quickly it shuts. Because I was speaking to some of the drivers in the paddock and they were saying they actually have to manually close the active aero. Because if you just brake like you used to do with DRS, sometimes it has to be shut in 0.4 seconds according to the rules. But sometimes it feels like it's not completely giving you the downforce on the initial brake. Now, if their rear wing is still upside down open, you can imagine when they hammer on the brake, they're going to be spinning around pretty hard into all these braking zones. So they're going to have to manually close it to make sure that it's there. And these are the sort of trade-offs. I really hope that they run it for one race, at least at the start of the year, and we can see. Because for me, it would go down as one of the great innovations.
So what of Aston Martin? First time they've used Honda power units, yet the test was incredibly difficult for them. They completed just 6 laps on the final day of testing, Honda saying that it was due to a lack of spare parts. How difficult is it? Just give us a flavour, JP.
They're in all world of pain right now. The problem is, I don't think there's a single aspect of that car that's working. To start with, Honda are way behind the curve with the power unit. They're not delivering the power, and the energy management is tough. The reliability is also a bigger concern. So you've got everything about the power unit not functioning as well as all their rivals. The reliability is a massive headache, which we saw fully play out on the last day where they could only do 6 laps and absolutely nothing meaningful to put on the board. And that means they're not finding anything in terms of the chassis development as well. So I was speaking to Ayo Komatsu at Haas, and they had a really good test. And I said, how much of this is actually before the last 3 days. So this was after Barcelona and the first Bahrain. And he said, we're doing really well. The Ferrari power unit is reliable. So we've managed to run through. We're working on all the energy management stuff, which was a huge part of it. But we're now running through all of our front wing sweeps, our roll balance stuff, mechanical stiffness, all of the usual stuff we're now running through to optimize the car. And if you look at someone like Aston Martin, they are so behind working out what setups to run on that car because they're so busy putting out fires on other parts that it's no wonder they don't feel like they've got downforce. It's no wonder the car is really difficult to drive. The gearbox is now made in-house, which has also got some issues with it. Everywhere you look, there is problems going on there,
and no short term fix either, right?
No. This is long term pain, unfortunately for the team. I mean, I guess when you talk about where they're coming from, and they will have the fastest rate of development because they're so far behind on the curve. They've done the fewest laps by far of anyone, barely turned up to Barcelona, really. Barely ran in the last test in Bahrain. So Pedro de la Rosa was talking and saying, every time we do a lap, we're learning something. But that in itself says that there is things that they are figuring out every lap, new things that they're trying to fix, but also things that they're discovering are going wrong. So tough year, really tough year coming up for them.
I was chatting to Pedro de la Rosa myself, and he was saying it's at moments like this that you really rely on the experience of Adrian Newey, because let's not forget he knows an awful lot about power units as well as chassis. And so while the headlines look really bad, he came straight into an engineering briefing and said, right, chassis wise do this, Honda PU wise do that. He totally took control, according to Pedro. But these things have lead times, and it's going to take a long time to sort out. Let's hope, though, for, you know, Alonso's 45. Let's hope that second half of the year we can at least see the car making progress. And well,
I think there's
getting some cheeky points.
Yeah, and I think that could be an expectation. It's just where they wanted to be. You know, this is a team that I think they knew that this was not going to be the easiest year of transition, but they want to be fighting for championships. They've built the super team of Adrian Newey, of Fernando Alonso, getting Honda, who in the last iteration of rules had the strongest power unit with Red Bull. So they've sort of put together a power team. They've done loads of work at the factory, and so far nothing's working. But they have the ingredients there to, if everything's firing at some point in the future, to be very good again. But it's just the lead time, as you say.
Well, JP, we're going to go into more detail in our season preview next week. Just final thoughts, really, on pre-season testing and particularly the new teams. I think let's have a quick word on Cadillac and Audi as well.
I was quite impressed with Audi, actually, especially the progress they made in the last week. I think they started they were the first car to hit the ground, weren't they, over the winter? First car to fire up, first car to get out for a shakedown. But then they had quite a few issues in Barcelona. But the way that car was developing, I thought by the end of the test, it looked pretty decent. The drivability looked so much better. The compliance of the car, it sounds shrill. When you're standing trackside, you can hear the Audi coming up the straight a kilometer away compared to everyone else. It also sounds really aggressive on the downshifts, which is sort of unsettling the car. But everything got better for them. The sound didn't change, but I quite like the raspy sound of the Audi. In terms of the drivability, it got better. And they are starting also from scratch, Audi with the power unit. So I thought they did a really good job, and I think they'll be well in that midfield fight looking for some points. Cadillac, what did you think of Cadillac? As a new team rocking in, we haven't had a new team on the grid for a while.
Phenomenal is what I thought. You know, if they'd been having the issues that Aston Martin had been having, I would have said, well, you know, what do you expect? Such a complex set of regulations, brand new team, they'll get better. But no, they've come in, they've hit the ground running. They've had a few electronic issues, haven't they, along the way in the Bahrain tests. But two experienced drivers just helping drive things along. I thought it seemed pretty serene and really good progress throughout pre-season testing.
Yeah, I think they've given themselves a really solid baseline, haven't they? They're fully expecting to be at the back of the field. Whether Aston Martin would give them a chance to be off the back row, maybe, might be there now. But I don't think they've got the downforce on the car. They still had a few more technical hiccups rather than anything massive go wrong. But also, when you look at the team, you look in the garage, and these guys are not inexperienced. They have hired well, I think, and that includes the drivers. But in terms of the technical department, the mechanics, they know how to run a Formula One car. So I'm expecting them to be respectable, and then hopefully to also get back towards the rest of the midfield.
And they've got the Ferrari power unit, so if it is brilliant off the line, wherever they line up
10.
In Melbourne. Yeah. Well, JP, it's been wonderful to chat to you again. I'm really looking forward to this season of podcasts with you. Look, final one from me. Look, as we get ready for Melbourne, what do you think is the pecking order? Can you give us a rough idea?
So I actually think I'm gonna hang my hat on this, but when I've had years of the whole field being separated by about 8 tenths, there is a bigger gap now. So there you can see a little bit more clearly the windows of which cars are performing. Mercedes v Ferrari, with a possible McLaren and Red Bull looking in. Is that vague enough to hang my hat on?
No, but I think that I think you've given us a lot there. And the big four is still the big four. Is that kind of what we're saying?
That's what we're saying. But I think Mercedes look happy. I think Ferrari your dark horses, and who knows if Verstappen or the McLarens can be there. And the midfield, then there's a bit of a drop off to a we haven't barely mentioned Haas, but they were really strong and could well be the front of the midfield. Alpine looking solid. Racing Bulls, also barely mentioned, but looking solid as well.
Well, lots to look forward to. JP, thank you very much for your time. We will be back next week with our big season preview ahead of the Australian Grand Prix. A few things to let you know about before we go. You'll be able to watch F1 Nation on the F1 YouTube channel this year. So that's the place to go if you prefer to watch us. And finally, you may have heard our announcement last week that our F1 Explains podcast has a new home here on the F1 Nation feed. Presenter Christian Hugill will be joined by F1 correspondent Lawrence Barreto on their first show of the year this Friday, the 27th of February. Lawrence will be answering your questions about the new cars and the new regulations, so do send those questions in to f1explains@f1.com. In the meantime, keep across all the latest Formula One news at f1.com, the official F1 app, or at F1 on social media. But thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you again next Monday.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.